the sugi here that I wanted to speak to you about today. It'll touch on some of the sugis that we've already learned and what's coming up. It starts actually on Gimel Amud Beis, about 10 lines up from the bottom, and continues on to the Avdalid Amud Aleph towards the middle of the page. This is the famous Safek of Rav Bibi Bar Abaye. It has nothing to do with Bibi from the political scene over here. But anyway, Rav Bibi had the following Safek. Hidvik pas betanur. He placed the dough into the oven. And if he leaves the status quo, it's going to bake, and therefore he's going to violate which malacha? Malachas Afir, correct. Afir is actually listed on Daf Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph as one of the 39 Avos Malachas. What was Rav Bibi's Safek? He tiru lo lirdosa. Okay, let's talk a little about lirdosa. The word lirdosa is a very technical term. Loosely, it means to remove the dough from the oven, but it's much more complicated than that.
Yes, you peel it away.
Right, it's not something that you and I could do without experience. So it's called a chachma in the Gemara's language. Not a malacha, but a chachma. And that's prohibited. But in this case, maybe Radias HaPas should be permitted for the sake of avoiding, as the Gemara says, Kodim Shiyovel Idechi Chatos, before he will fully violate the Malacha Nechiv Chatos of Malecha Safiya, Olohi Tiru. Well, maybe perhaps we have to insist that Radia Sapas, insofar as it's a Chachma Vienna Malacha, has to be insisted upon, meaning we have no room for leniency.
Safeguarded
for the sake of this Isur of Radia Sapas. If you take a look at Rashi quotes a sugya. Rashi Dibra Maskal Hidbik Pas Betana quotes a sugya later on Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis. And the Gemara establishes that because Radia Sapas is a Chachma, even though it's not a malacha, they prohibited it under the law of Shvus. Now, exactly what Shvus means, that requires a lot of study. Most people interpret Shvus as a Drabbanon. It's much more complicated than that. But be that as it may, can the Rabbanon allow him, in this case, step aside and permit him to do the Radia Sapas and violate the Isur Shvus for the greater good of preventing the violation, the full-fledged violation of Meleches Afia Doraisa, which is called a Chiyuv Chatos? And basically, the Gemara goes on to say that this is an impossible question, because if you're going to tell him not to be Roda the Pas, he's not going to listen to you. He has to save himself from a Chiyuv Chatos. And that leads the Gemara on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph to reformulate the Safek of Rav Bibi Bar Abaye in a slightly different scenario, but it's a critical change, and that is where Reuven places the dough into the oven. That's called Hidbik Pas Betanur, and Shimon could violate the Isur Radias HaPas for the sake of saving Reuven from violating Meleches Shabbos. So Reuven's now out of the picture. He went home, he fell asleep, wherever he is, he's out of range of contact. So now Shimon steps in, and he wants to know, what should he do in this case? We have a principle called Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh L'Zeh, and he feels personally responsible to save and protect Reuven from violating a Meleches Shabbos. Should Shimon step up to the plate, so to speak, and be Roda the Pas, even though insofar as his personal violation, he will violate an Isur Shvus, but for the greater good of preventing Reuven from violating an Isur Malacha Doraisa.
This is, this is the dough that was put in the oven on Shabbat, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Because if it were there from Erev Shabbat, everybody in the right country could say, let it burn.
Right, no, I meant to say the language of Rabbi Abaye of Hidvik Pas Betanur means it was on Shabbat. If you take a look at Rashi, I didn't bother reading all the Rashis, but he'd be paspatana b'Shabbos, and if he did it b'Shogeg, for example, he's going to violate an Isur Chatos. Does Shimon have the right and possibly even the obligation to save Reuven from violating the Meleches Afia by taking it out of the pas, even though it's at Shimon's own expense? I mean, this is what you call situational ethics. I mean, all over, you know, in every secular system, we have issues of this sort. But in Halacha, Lahavdil, you know, it becomes a very profound issue. And in the Gemara's language, you take a look on Daf Dalet Amud Aleph, it's about, I would say, if you're counting from the bottom, I would count up about 12 lines and see if it lands on the right place. You know, the first word in the line is Sheshes. That's Rav Sheshes. You see that? On Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. So again, you're counting up from the bottom of Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. And he says, V'chi omrim lo li adam chatei kidei sheyizkeh chavercha. And the Gemara asks, like, rhetorically, do we say that someone, in this case Shimon, should violate a chet in order to protect the zchuyot, you know, the merits of his friend, Reuven? Should Shimon jump into the scene and violate his personal isur for the sake of being mezakeh his friend Reuven? And the Gemara asks that as a rhetorical question, because the Gemara means that obviously ain't omrim li adam chatei b'shvil shetizkeh chavero. Now, if you take a look at Tosus, which we don't have time for today, this very long Tosus v'chi, he goes through all of Shas to try to prove that, on the contrary, we do violate an isur in order to protect someone else from a lesser isur. Just to give you one example,
from a
greater isur. So he gives. He gives one example that we force the Adon, the master who owns the Eved, in the case of a, again, I don't want to get into this, Chatzi Eved, Chatzi Ben Chorin, but we force him to deliver a get, Shichrur, meaning to free his slave for the sake of the mitzvah of Piri of Arivia, so that this slave could marry a Jewish girl. He's a half Eved, half Ben Chorin, and the Ben Chorin Shabbo wants to and is obligated to fulfill the mitzvah period, but is prevented from doing so because of the Chatzi Eved Shabbo. So again, it's a complicated case where two people owned an Eved in partnership, and one of those two owners freed his half of the Eved. The other half of the Eved that's owned by the other partner is still an Eved, that's called a Chatzi Eved, and the only way that this Eved never could fulfill his mitzvah, Piri Verivia, marry a Jewish girl, is only if the second partner would also deliver a get shichur. And in doing so, again, this is complicated, but he, the second partner, would violate an Isur. Because you're not allowed to be Meshachar and Eved. Anyway, so there are cases where we will tell a person, and that's the subject of this Tosis, that he should violate an Isur. But Tosis is going to say that those are very exceptional cases, and so forth and so on. Okay, now Rabosai, we can close the Gemara for the time being. Hopefully we'll come back to it. And I'm going to ask you the following, shall I say, pedagogical, I'm just trying to see if I can test your thinking here. What premise underlies the entire sugya of Rav Bibi Bar Abaye about Melecha Safir? Shmuel, if you don't mind closing the door, they're behind you. There's a certain premise that maybe seems so obvious, but we should spell it out because it's not obvious at all, that underlies the question, that is the basis, the fundamental background for this question of should we be rode in the pas and take it out of the oven in order to prevent the violation of Melech Safiyah, Joel?
Is the Aveira the moment you put the pas into the oven, or only at the final time when it's
correct? What is the Melech of Afir? And the same question is going to apply to Bishul. Is it putting the pot on the fire, or in the case of Afir, putting the dough into the oven? Or is the malacha violated if and when it's baked or it's cooked? In other words, how do we view malacha safir? There are two parts to afir. One part is the actual maisa, right? What we call the kumbah, say, you know, the active element of putting the dough into the oven, or in the case of Bishul, putting the pot on the fire. And then we have the actual afir that takes place as a matter of course, within the course of time, because the heat of the oven will bake the dough, or in the case of Bishel, the heat coming up from the fire is going to cause a process of cooking. But now, we have to ask ourselves the following question. Is it the actual cooking or baking as a final clincher? Is that what finishes off the what we call the Gemar Malacha? Is that the complete Malacha of Malachas Hafir, Malachas Bishul? Or should we say the following? That once he puts the pot on the fire or puts the dough in the oven, he has done whatever he has to do, so to speak, in order to violate the Malacha. And if the Malacha is already set in stone, it's already completed, it's already been clinched, and we don't have to wait till the Afiyah of the Bishul.
I mean, it's almost a psik ratio. You put it there, you think it's not going to cook or it's not going to bake. I mean,
fire. So Ben is arguing, you really know that once you put it into the oven, it's going to bake. It's going to, or in the case of a pot, it's going to cook. So the knowledge up front that it's definitely going to happen, that supports the view that you've already violated what you have to violate it in terms of the malach. But on the other hand, can anybody express the paradox of that position? Well, what is problematic about it?
Retroactively, the person is higher than Chatas?
No. Ben is saying the following, that maybe we could have argued, again, if not for the Sugi Rabbi Barbaye, that the Malach is complete, as Joel said before, once he puts the dough in the oven. Forget about what happens later. The guy dies, Nebuchadnezzar, and he goes up to heaven. Does he have another violation on his chart? He wasn't even alive at the time of the Afiyah. Or all of a sudden, somebody drops a hand grenade on the tanur, and the tanur goes up in smoke, and the dough with it, but it never really baked. Who cares whether it baked or didn't? He did the act of placing the dough in the oven. But Rabbi said, why is that position very... very problematic?
It didn't really get baked yet.
Oh, what is the malacha? The malacha is afiyah. Again, you could talk about defining and pinpointing exactly what the kumva says. You know, what's the asiyas hamalacha as far as the person is concerned. But as far as the baking is concerned, clearly you would need the baking to actually take place in reality. So that if, let's say, for example, for some strange reason, it never got baked. You know, I don't know.
The fire went out.
Yeah, the wind came and the fire went out. So then obviously he's not high for afiyah. You can find him guilty for attempted afiyah. But he never actually did the afiyah. Therefore, Rabbi Barabai's premise is crystal clear. That if Shimon takes out the dough before it gets the opportunity to bake, that's not Malacha Safir. The Maisa HaMachayev, the Maisa which generates the Chiyuv Malacha, has been done. That's complete. Reuven did whatever he had to do. He can go on a trip and it doesn't matter. He's violating the Malacha Safir. But the condition, the precondition to say that the Chet has been violated, again, not as far as the Maisa is concerned, is the fact that his attempt at a fear was successful.
And now I'm confused, because I always thought, until now, that this verb of radia, taking the pot out, the bread out with the stick, right, and that's a chokmah, you only did that after the bread rose, because now it's bread and not dough. And that's maybe what made it tricky or something. Until the entire cooking process completes, if you take out dough that was just stuck inside an oven, is that still an Iser Shvut?
Well, yes. In other words, the Iser Shvut is as follows. Normally, you know, we would call upon the professionals. By the way, there's a place here, this is not an advertisement, but there's a place here on Derech Hebron called Agvania. I don't know if you've ever eaten. And it's really cool there because they make pizza there in a European kind of way, you know, that you can. It's not like our thick pizza that we're used to. It's like if you have been to Paris and you know there are plenty of kosher pizza shops in Paris or in Italy. It's a very flat kind of thing. But what's cool about it is that they make the pizza in front of your eyes, and as they're rolling the dough, they throw it up in the air and they catch it. It's something cute to see. And then you see them taking it out of the oven. So it's a whole chokhmah. Normally, obviously, if you come into Agvaniyah, they're not going to take the dough and remove it from the oven prematurely until it bakes. But as far as Radia is concerned, I might be able to be rode in the pas in such a way without damaging the dough, even though it's not fully baked. And if you remember, we discussed the Mishnah Daf Yutesim base that the baking is clinched at the point of krimas pas betana, which is parallel to Kemayapal Benjosoy. And you can take it out at that point and then put it back in again, if for whatever reason you'd want to do so. And you could actually do the Bishul in pas. Right. But what's our point here, Rabosai? We said the following, and here's where I want to tickle your brain with another question that goes beyond. What we've said is the following. The Maisa HaMachayev, the act that defines Melech HaSafir from the point of view of the human being, you know, his active agency, is putting the dough into the oven. That's called Hidbik Paspita. Number two, the Melech HaSafir is only violated if and when the afir takes place. So far, so good. Here's the intriguing question. What happens if Reuven puts his dough into the oven 5 minutes before Shabbos ends, and the baking takes place after Shabbos?
Still
when you say he's chayev, David, again, we're assuming that the afiyah has to take place. Does the afiyah have to take place on Shabbos or after Shabbos? What would be your intuitive response? David, you say he would be chayev, even though the afiyah took place after Shabbos.
Well, I don't think it matters.
I'm going to fight you on that one. Yeah.
I don't think it matters, because chazarah, he's guilty of chazarah. He's put something on open fire on Shabbat. Doesn't matter whether it cooks or not.
But wait a second. You're talking about a much more severe isur than chazarah, because chazarah is a drabbanon. I'm talking about a doraisa. He has violated the malacha doraisa by putting he puts the dough into the oven. That's malach safir. But again, we've established, and that we prove from Rabbi Bibi Bar Abaye, that it's conditional. We've got to have an afir. If you don't have the afir, there's no malacha. Now you're going to tell me that afir could take place after Shabbos? That's pretty odd.
It's got to be very similar to planting the seed.
Oh, okay. So that's what this article is about. I don't know if you got a chance to look at it. We don't even usually give Joel a photocopy because he knows it all. But right. This article is about the following question. There's melech ezrim, which means you put the seed into the ground. Now, when I say you put the seed into the ground, that's the Maisa HaMachayev. But as far as the Chiyuv itself, meaning the condition that has to be fulfilled in order to get Zriya, is what?
That's root.
Correct. That's called Hashrasha. It's got to take root. Now, the Gemara establishes in various places in Shas that Hashrasha is a process that takes a minimum of 72 hours. So that means, by definition, Zriya will never be violated on Shabbos. That's paradoxical, because Zriya is one of the 39 malachas, and it's, if you're going to knock it out of the box by saying it could never actually happen, then why is it listed in the 39? So we would, if we use Zriya as our paradigm, it means that the actual Hashrasha is going to take place after Shabbos, and therefore by comparison, by analogy, in the case of Afiyah, the actual Afiyah could take place after Shabbos. And he'd still be chayav, which is really cool, because if you think about it, this whole question of Rabbi Abaye now takes on a whole nother perspective. What is Rabbi Abaye is worried about the fact that Shimon, by doing the Radiyah, is violating his Isur Shvus. I got a better idea. Why doesn't Shimon wait until after Shabbos and then do the Radiyah Sapas? And he violates no Shvus, accomplishing the same goal of sparing Reuven of violating Melech HaSafir. Because if we're going to say that the Melech HaSafir could take place after Shabbos, and he's chayav for that after Shabbos, let's just guarantee that afir after Shabbos will never take place, and that itself would save Reuven from the violation of the law.
What I'm hearing is a parallel to Shehiyah Aleph and Shehiyah Bet. If I plan to see Friday morning early enough so that it's within that 72 hours of Shabbos, but if I somehow, right before Shabbos, I take it out of the ground, then I should be okay.
It's unbelievable. I can plant the seed and then take it out, and I didn't violate anything.
If I take it out before Shabbos.
But again, the oddity still remains that you're chayav only if it takes root, and that process is going to take 3 days. So you have here a malacha, which by its very definition requires the fulfillment of a condition after Shabbos. And if we apply that to the Afiyah case, then if the condition of Afiyah is that the dough is baked, that baking process can reach its fulfillment, its culmination, way after Shabbos. It may take hours until it's actually baked, and then I can violate the Isur Afiyah, because again, I did the Ma'aseh Machayev on Shabbos, and the Tnai, the condition of making that Malacha to Malacha, can take place even after Shabbos. So we can fulfill that condition after Shabbos.
Can you separate the punishment from the Isur? Now, you don't get punished until you completed the thing, but you're not allowed to start it.
Okay, attempted murder is a question in law. You know, in secular law, attempted murder is there's a tremendous liability. In halacha, it's less clear. You know, again, there are various meta legal punishments that Beis Din could mete out in order to establish society, you know, to be takin, to be well oiled, the system well oiled. But technically speaking, attempted violation, attempted criminal acts is not punishable according to Jewish law. As much as for us Westerners that seems, you know, anticlimactic. You know, if a terrorist, you know, throws a bomb and whatever happens, you know, some miracle, he doesn't kill anybody, you know, we'll lock this guy up for life, you know. But in Jewish law, it doesn't work that way. So that you're right, you know, we can certainly, I wouldn't call him up for shishi, you know, and give him the best aliyah in the book when he put the pas into the oven and by some miracle it never baked. But nevertheless, he didn't violate the Malechus Bishul until the Bishul takes place. But our question, and this is very puzzling, can the Afiyah take place after Shabbos? In the case of Zriah, if I don't agree, if I don't recognize the fact that the actual Ashrosh is going to take place after Shabbos, then I've just completely undermined and neutralized the entire Malechus Zriah. But that's not so in the case of Bishul or in the case of Afiyah. You know, it's very logical and likely that the Afiyah will take place within the 24 hours of Shabbos, and if you have both the Maisa Machayev and the Tanai that now has been fulfilled, both took place on Shabbos, and during the, you know, the Heliga, Holy Shabbos, you know, something baked. And it didn't just bake, you know, like it fell down from heaven. It baked because a person put it in the oven. So that I understand. So if the Afiyah took place on Shabbos, then the culmination of the Malechus Afiyah was on Shabbos. But if it took place and the final Afiyah took place after Shabbos, I don't know. I'm not so eager to say that in that case I could derive from Zriah necessarily that the Afiyah could take place after Shabbos, just like the Tanai of Zriah and Hashrasha that it take root to is after Shabbos. So here of Soloveitchik, and this is what we want to see, again, sort of, what's the word I want to use? He stimulates our intellectual curiosity. You know, he really engages us in profound thought. He says the following. Let's take the case of Havara. Havara means you light a fire, correct? Now, when you light a fire, he says the following. The fire continues to burn over the course of time. And one could argue that the continuous process of burning is called Malechus Havara. But let me see it inside here so I can show you the text. He says, this is on page Chaf Hey. You know, there's a small piece which we'll go through, God willing, on the bottom of Chaf Dalet. But if you take a look on Chaf Hey, will you find a paragraph that starts Vehine? I mean, the first paragraph, Vehine. There are two paragraphs that start with Vehine. So if you take a look in that paragraph, on line 4, he says, at the end of line 4, he says, Madlik ner b'Shabbos l'chole b'Shabbos. Now, in order to help this chole, you need light. You know, you can't function without the light. And he's lighting a candle for the sake of the chole. Now, this candle is going to burn even after Shabbos. if he puts enough oil into it. And he says the following, Lo matzina, we don't find Shu chayav lemait b'shir ha-shemen shebenei kedei shelo yidlat mikocho gam b'motzoi Shabbos. Now what he's saying is the following, that when he lights this fire, let's assume that in the case of Zriya, and maybe even in the case of Afia, he could be chayav for the actual molacha that's done and completed after Shabbos. Meaning, let's assume that even if the Afia takes place, the final Afia after Shabbos, Motzoi Shabbos, he's chayav for that. Again, that's going to be our issue. Says Rav Soloveitchik that by analogy, if he puts in enough oil that'll last until after Shabbos, then what's the malacha now is going to be completed when? Okay. After Shabbos.
And there's no issue with that.
Well, again, there's no issue with that, but there's only one problem, that there was no heter then to violate the Shabbos. In other words, I can violate the Shabbos for the sake of the cholah on Shabbos itself, but I can't violate Shabbos in a way that the violation will take place after Shabbos based on the fact that I have a cholah. And therefore, what we should require is that we can only allow him to violate the Shabbos on Shabbos, but not after Shabbos. In other words, basically we're saying here that if the afiyah could take place after Shabbos, then you could have, paradoxically, a melacha that's done on Motzi Shabbos. Because again, the afiyah took place on Motzi Shabbos. That's when the melacha is done. So you're not allowed to do a maisa which will lead to a melacha that's being accomplished on Motzi Shabbos. In the case of Hadlokas Ner Shabbos, what you're doing is you're lighting a candle. That maisa is going to generate a meleches havara after Shabbos, and you don't have a heter for that. Mm-hmm. There's no heter to create a melacha that will be clinched on Motzei Shabbos. Mm-hmm. So therefore, he says what we should have required was that he measure out the oil in such a way that there'll only be a volume of oil in his candle to last until Motzei Shabbos, but not beyond. You know, it's up until the end of Shabbos, but no drops of oil beyond Shabbos. Because if you have drops of oil that are going to extend this havar to after Shabbos, he's going to be chayav for that melacha by virtue of the maisa that he did on Shabbos. You'll tell me, but he has a cholah. Yeah, but that permissibility for a cholah only applies on Shabbos, but not after Shabbos. So if the melacha is going to be done after Shabbos, there's no heter to allow him to do that melacha. V'lo matzinu, he says, we didn't find anywhere shuchayav lemait v'shir hashemen, that we have to ask him to be mitzamtzeh, meaning to limit the volume of oil shebener kidei shlo yidlok mikocho gam b'motzoi Shabbos. And here's where Rav Soloveitchik says the following: Achein nira pashuv, the bevadai ein chiyuv ha-malacha shenaseis mikocho b'motzei Shabbos. It's impossible. It's unthinkable that you're chayav on Shabbos for malacha that's completed after Shabbos. If the malacha is completed after Shabbos, you're not chayav. The only thing is that the Yushalmi, which is quoted in the previous paragraph, towards the end of that paragraph, about five lines up, I think I underlined it, I don't know if it came out in the photocopy, but the Yushalmi holds that if Bishol b'Shabbos Kadesh is Bashal b'Motzei Shabbos, if he puts food in a pot on Shabbos in such a way that the food is going to cook after Shabbos, that's a violation of Meleches Bishol. So how do we square again? We're trying. Oh, okay. So let's do what we did yesterday. We have two premises, and they seem to be contradictory. Premise number one is that you can begin a process of afiyah or bishul, and the actual melacha will be completed after Shabbos, and you'll be chayav. And that takes the analogy to Zriya to its full course. Premise number two is that when I light a fire on Shabbos and the fire is going to continue to be lit into Motzai Shabbos, I don't have a problem with that. Because if I had a problem with that, you'd have to tell me, in the case that I'm allowed to light this fire for the sake of a cholah, that I should put in a very limited, well-calculated volume of oil. Because otherwise, if I have too much oil, it's going to be burning after Shabbos. And if it's burning after Shabbos, it's like the case of Bishul and Afiyah, where the actual Bishul and the Afiyah took place after Shabbos, and nevertheless he's chayav. And we don't find such a thing. He says, you'll never find anyone who says that for the sake of a cholah, and you're lighting the nair, you have to make sure that the oil, the shemen in the nair, is the exact volume that'll last until but not beyond the end of Shabbos.
Masha Shahaya is that if you have to drive your wife to the hospital on Shabbos because she's having a baby,
right?
Which I did, I was told I couldn't turn the car off, and then it's going to keep running on Shabbos. So it'd be the same thing as a candle. I started the car with a heter, but the heter's going to go on.
But let's assume, I don't know enough about the engines and how they work, but let's assume there's a melechas havara in lighting an engine, and as the chashmal or whatever continues the engine going, that's a malach of havara. And in that case, if you turned on the you ignited the engine in such a way that it's going to continue into Motzei Shabbos, you've got yourself a problem. And yet nobody raises that issue. Obviously, it's not an issue. So therefore, Rav Soloveitchik concludes that this Yerushalmi is the exception to the rule, meaning Bishul and Afia are in a category of their own. And why is that? The answer is because Bazeh Iker Molechas Afia Ubishul, the way that the Torah prohibits or formulates and defines the Iser of Bishul and Afia is that he does the Maisa Anocha, which means he places it down on the fire or in the oven, and then the afia, the bishul, takes place me'eleha. Me'eleha means on its own. So he just sets up the process. So he's chayav for setting into motion that process, and therefore, even if that process comes to its fruition on after Shabbos or Motzi Shabbos, nevertheless, he's chayav for what he did to set up that process on Shabbos. And therefore, Mali and Bishul, in a Bishul Nasa B'motzi Shabbos, I don't care about the fact that the Bishul took place after Shabbos. Also, Humachayev al Maisa Hanocha Shahaya B'Shabbos. Avo Malachas Mavir, the Malacha Guf Havara. The Malacha is not just lighting or igniting, but it is the burning itself. Bishabbos, if you can unwind that word, Bishabbos. And what this is all about is that there's a gigantic debate about whether or not you'd be chayav for afiyah if the afiyah takes place after Shabbos. And those who say that, you're chayav for melechas afiyah even though it took place after Shabbos, they bring a proof from the Yerushalmi, because the Yerushalmi says that he put the pot on the fire and it's gonna cook after Shabbos, and that's a violation of Shabbos. So you see that even though the bishul takes place after Shabbos, he's still chayav. And there were those who wanted to extrapolate from that and say that in all malachas, as long as you set the process into motion, you can be chayav for what takes place after Shabbos. And that's not fair. That's a foul play. Because what the Yerushalmi is talking about is melechas afiyah, melechas bishul, and only that malacha. Because what's unique about that malacha is that by placing the pot on the fire or putting the dough in the oven, he kicks off a process that will lead to bishul, lead to afiyah, and we don't care when that bishul takes place, if it's during Shabbos or after Shabbos, but as far as other malachas is concerned, you have no right to universalize that principle. On the contrary, the malacha itself, when it's achieved, when it's accomplished, is the violation of the malacha. And that has to take place on Shabbos. In the case of Afiyah and Bishul, what is the violation? Setting the process into motion.
So what good is Rabbi B's question?
No, Rabbi B wants to know what happens. If I can...
It wouldn't help any.
No. Again, you have to set the process into motion, and then it has to take place at the end, but it can take place after Shabbos. And the paradox is, well, wait a minute, if the malacha took place after Shabbos, why am I chai from a malacha that takes place after Shabbos? And the answer is because I set that process in motion. If that process reaches fruition, I'm chai. If it doesn't reach fruition because someone else takes it out, then I never violated malacha Shabbos. So again, there's what we call the machayev and there's the tanai. The machayev tells me why you're chayev, and the tanai tells me when you're chayev. They're two different questions, why and when. The why is because you set this process into motion. The when is when that process successfully reaches fruition. If you can arrest the process midway so it never comes to fruition, then the tanai was not fulfilled and you're not chayev. But why is it that tanai of Melech Safir can take place after Shabbos? The answer is because the Mechayev is putting it in the oven. In other halachas, the Mechayev is not just putting it in, right, starting the process, but the culmination of the process. Because that's the Melech Machshavos, that's the accomplishment. So right, every one of the 39 halachas establishes an accomplishment, a tachlis, a tikkun. And that tikkun takes place on Shabbos, and then it clinches the Melech. He's chayef for A plus B. So let's see. Oh, I see we're not back yet to the thing. It's here in theory, but I'm going to write it out on a piece of paper, and maybe we'll kind of make a little chart out of it if we can. And I'll pass this around again. This is our luach today. That's what we have. We have let's call it Aleph and Bet. Aleph is the Maisa Ha'adam, and Bet is the Molacha Atzma, okay? And we're saying the following, that there's something called a Maisa HaMachayev, and then there's something called a Tanai. And here we're going to differentiate between Afia / Bishul, as opposed to the other, we'll call it Shar HaMalachas. Okay? So it works like this. In the case of Afia, the Maisa Machayev is Hanochas
Paspatan.
Ha'ochel, right, or Paspatan, or I'm using it in a way that it'll cover Bishul as well. Ha'ochel, right, and let's get it, the language. Hanochas ha'ochel right b'mokom she's bashel or sheyefe right and then the molacha atzma right so that's aleph the molacha atzma which means the bishul itself is a tanai, and I'll explain what I mean by that. In the case of kol shar hamalachos, both aleph and bet become the maisa hamachayev. We'll call it the machayev, hamachayev. Give me just a minute, hamachayev. In the case of kol shar malachas, you need both the maisa and the malacha atzma to form together one whole, which is called the machayev. Okay, so see if you can pass this around and if you can make sense out of my chart. Yes, Shmuel, what were you saying?
No, I was going to say in the Zriya example, you don't need the seed to germinate then to be chayev in malacha.
I don't have to say that anymore. You might be right. I don't know. But even if I assume you need the seed to take, you know, to be rooted, that's only as a tanai, and therefore can take place after Shabbos. So again, in the case of Zriya, the Maisa HaMachayev is the placing the Zera into the ground, which is parallel in the case of Afiyah and Bishul, according to this particular opinion, to putting the pot on the fire or placing the dough in the oven. That's the Maisa Machayev. Now, take a long trip to China, take a long rest for I don't care how long, and you're Chayev. as long as the tnai is fulfilled. What's the tnai? In the case of Zri, it's Hashrosha. In the case of Afi, it's the Afi.
So if I took the seed out of the ground once Monsei Shabbat, I could be okay.
It might be that you're okay.
I've got a second chance.
Right. Might be okay. Yeah. I'm not sure that it's okay, but it might be okay. Right? But in Shar Malachos, it's not even enough to say that the tnai would happen. That tnai is part and parcel. It's integrated into the very essence of the Machayev, and therefore, when does it have to happen? On Shabbos itself.
So this, his example is the same as a man who tried to bake a pita towards the end of Shabbat, realized his mistake, and pulled it back out before
Correct.
It had baked.
Correct. And if you tell him not to do so, he's not even going to listen to you. The question is, if somebody else can pull it out, then it comes under the issue. But again, if it's Motzei Shabbos, that's what I pointed out at the beginning, then there's no problem. For sure, anyone in the world should be obligated to take that dough out of the
Sometimes, Harvey, maybe you want to see in sure. Hello, we discuss, we look at the way it was done at the time of the Mishkan, building the Mishkan. So, do we have to make a working assumption that the Maisa Malacha has to happen on Shabbos? There's no way, like, you plant it Wednesday morning and then it...
Well, again, when they planted in the Mishkan, it took 3 days until it took root. I mean, that wasn't... that wasn't any different in that reality than it is in our reality.
But it has to start on Shabbos. There's no like planting it Wednesday morning and then sprouts and shines. No worse than
Oh, so spot. Again, you know, the Rav was wondering, you know, what happens if I start this process in a way that it's heter? Okay, the Rav wasn't actually thinking on Wednesday. He was thinking on Shabbos, but let's say there's a kola. That was his example. I started the heter, but the malach itself is going to be concluded after Shabbos. That he says is a no-no. You know, that's not even feasible. That doesn't register on the radar screen. But on the other hand, if let's say there could have been, right, in Bishul, there could have been two scenarios of Bishul. One scenario is where the Bishul takes place on Shabbos. The other scenario is where the Hanukkah took place on Shabbos, but the Bishul is going to take place after Shabbos. And there's one school of thought that argues, and it's based on a very solid evidence in the Yerushalmi, that since it's going to bake on Motzei Shabbos, he's chayav for what he did on Shabbos by putting it on the fire, and that the Rav says is an exception to the rule with a very revolutionary tinge to it, because what it's saying is that you set in motion a process that's going to reach fruition after Shabbos. The Malach itself is going to happen after Shabbos, and you're chayav for the process that you set into motion on Shabbos. But the Rav insists that's only if you take that Yerushalmi only with regard to Malachas Mishkan. It's not something that we have a right to extrapolate and universalize for the other Malachas.
Regarding Zriya, you have a problem with Hasra Safek. How could you ever be chayav Zriya? I warn you, you can't do this. He said, well, I'm going to take it back. It will never happen.
Right. So that's a brilliant question that Tosis actually addresses in a different context in Masechta Gittin. Why? Because the Gemara says in Masechta Gittin that you can give a person a hasra, let's say, for a violation of an isa neder or an isa shvua, and if he goes ahead and he accepts that hasra, nevertheless he violates the neder shvua, he gets punished for that. So Tosis raises the question, but maybe he could be shoal on his neder. In other words, it's the nedarim work in a very strange way. Even after I violate the neder, I still have a possibility of being shoel on the neder. Now, again, I don't want to get into issues here. There's a difference between hafaras habal and hataras nedarim. But hataras nedarim works from afreya retroactively. So now, it turns out I can be, again, this is another case of attempted criminal act. I could be in full violation of a neder or shvua, and then retroactively exonerate myself from that violation. Through what? Through Ataris Nadar. Again, I have to live up to the standards and the requirements of Ataris Nadar. But assuming I can do so. So Tosa says, if that be the case, then every case of Neder and Shvua comes under Hasra Safek. Right, let's just backtrack a little bit about Hasra Safek. Hasra has to be such that I tell him with absolute certainty, in the 100% definitively, that if he does X, he's going to be punished. That doesn't apply to Nedarim and Shvuah, because even if he does X, and he, let's say, took a Shvuah, he took an end to not eat this kikar, he ate the kikar, so he violated the Asra, it's still not definitive, because the paradox of Nedarim and Shvuah is that you can have a Hataras Nedarim that operates Lamafreya, even after he violated it, he can undermine and neutralize his violation. So Tosas answers this, that when do we say Asra Safeg? That's when it's not clear if he's doing the Maisa Machayev. Meaning, I don't know if his action is a criminal action. But if he can undo that action afterwards, Lamafreya, that's not Asra Safeg. The reason and the premise that underlies the Chiyuv Onshin.
It was an Avera when it was done.
It was an Avera in its time, and there was no question about that. The fact that I can do something later to undermine it doesn't make it into Asra Safeg. And again, that has to be obviously taken, you know, that's a. Here also, what do? I did the Maisa Machayev. There's a Tanai. The Bishul has to take place after Shabbos. It's not Asra Safeg. Why? Because the fact that I take the food off the pot or take the Zera and I rip it out of the ground, that's already undermining the Malacha that I violated. The Maisa Machayev was complete. It was definite. Now you have the power to undermine it. So there's a difference between a condition that's necessary in a positive way to create the Avera, as opposed to the possibility of undermining the Avera. So if the condition must be met in order to violate the Avera for your criminal violation, then it becomes Asra Safeg, because you could always say, well, I did this, but I might not do that. And I might not ever fulfill the condition. But if on the other hand you can do something, if your violation is complete, but you have the ability, you have something in your pocket that allows you to cancel the Avera, that's not called Asra Safeg. Okay, that's off on a different thing. Okay. Now in the first paragraph, I see it's getting a little late, but I don't wanna skip the first paragraph. And Rabosa, if you're interested in this presentation here, I would continue with this tomorrow as well. I mean, it's at least a 2-day project. The only drawback to this is that then we'll, take it a little bit of a hafsaka, a pause from our regular learning in Perikira. So that I'm going to leave that decision for you. Hopefully by tomorrow I'll be back on my feet. But I needed this, because whatever. I mean, last night I didn't have that much time to prepare, which happens from time to time. I don't think it's going to happen again exactly the way it happened last night, because we have an empty nest. But okay, boy, Rav Bibi Bar Abaye Hidbik Pas Betanu. Okay, so we're back on Chavdal, just because I sort of wanted to give you the. It says he tirulol erdoso karam sheyavol idechiyim chatas aloi tiru varashash lomad mizeh. Okay, Rashash's name was Rav Shmuel Strechin. Okay, he lived about a century ago. Lama mizeh, derived from this, the gam bimalecha zorea in zora bekarka. And again, there's a condition that it has to reach what's called klita. I called it hashrash. He calls it klita. Klita means niklat. It's absorbed into the ground. What was the word that you used before, David?
To take root.
Take root.
Sprouts.
I don't think sprouting. Sprouting is usually, I think, a later stage when we see it on the ground. But I'm talking about something that happens. It's not visible to the naked eye because it happens under the ground. He says, "Gam b'malecha zorea im zora bekarka v'hotzi." Right, this is parallel to the case where he took out the dough from the oven before it baked. Hodem sheniklat bekarka, before it took root. Who potter? Dolonis kaima machshavto. Machshavto meaning the accomplishment of this malacha did not come to fruition. Ach, however, ha'igle tal, otherwise known as the sukkach of a rebbe, b'meleches zorea, he tells you where to find it, it's called meleches zorea, heshiv, he responded to this rashash, the yesh lechalik, that your analogy and your derivation is not justified. Why? because there's meleches oreh and there's meleches hafiyah and bishul, and they should not be equated. Why? In the case of zoreah, if he will seed on Shabbat, place the seed in samach lishkias hachamav right before the end of Shabbos, in a way that's efshar sheyashrish, it won't take root. B'Shabbos hafilu hachi, nevertheless hu chayav. Ubal karchach de'admar malach shal meleches oreh hi bizriya b'karka levad. And again, when he says the Gemara Malachi, he's referring to the Maisa Machayev. The Maisa Machayev is complete with the act of Zriya. The Sagi Bazen, it's enough to define his Maisa Machayev as being a complete Maisa Machayev. Shu roi liklot ula hashrish bekarka charkach. Meaning, you've set into motion a process that will culminate in Mirtz Hashem in Ashrasha. Umasha ain came by fear, but Afias passed the tanur, Pshita Shim Hoya Lo Te Offa El Motzai Shabbos. If he sets it up in a way that it'll only be able to bake after Shabbos, which was the case of the Rashash, correct? Then he says the following. He says, Bevare Potter. So we're both sides. What he's saying is the following, Digleital, that even though Melechus Zriya, you can set it up in such a way that the Ashrash is going to take place after Shabbos, that's the way Melechus Zriya was formulated, that you just have to set in motion a process, and we don't care when that process culminates, as long as it does culminate. But in the case of Afia, Pshita, he says, no. It's got to be baked and capable of being reaching baking on Shabbos itself. Therefore, and he says that the Minchas Chinuch agrees with this position that the afi has to take place on Shabbos. And all this was great until the Chelkis Yoav came along about a century ago, less even. And he says, the Yerushalmi says the exact opposite, that even if the Bishul takes place on Motzi Shabbos, he violates the Isur Bishul. So again, Rabbosai, what we have here is the following. We have a fundamental machlokas between the Rashash and the Iglei Tal, right? These are two giants who lived in the last within the last century, about the following question. Can we use Meleches Oreh as our paradigm for other Melechus, like Afi and Bishul, such that these Melechus might be completed after Shabbos? Why? Because there's a Maisa Machayev, which means I set a process into motion, and there's a Tanai. There's an extraneous condition that has to be fulfilled. That condition can be fulfilled after Shabbos. Doesn't matter when it's fulfilled. And the Rashash used Zriya as that paradigm that the actual Malacha takes place after Shabbos, but that doesn't matter. It's only a Tanakh. The Maisa Machayev setting the Zriya Hashrasha process into motion took place on Shabbos for that Yechayev. So argues the Rashash. And therefore the Rashash wants to suggest that you can put a dough into the oven right before Hashecha, right before Shabbos ends, and the baking will take place after Shabbos and Yechayev. Comes along the Iglei Tal, he says no. There's no valid derivation or analogy here, because in the case of Zriya, that's the Malach of Zriya. The Malach of Zriya is putting the seed into the ground, setting into motion a process, and as Rosh takes place, the Malach is achieved after Shabbos. Not so in the case of Bishul or Afia, there the Bishul Afia has to take place on Shabbos itself. Comes along the Chelkis Yov, who's after the Iglei Tal, and he says, wait a minute, that's against the Yerushalmi. Because Yerushalmi says that even though the Bishul and Afia will take place Motzei Shabbos, you're still Chayev despite it all. And in the next paragraph, Rav Soloveitchik points out that even if I accept the Chelkis Yov and the Rashash, both of whom argue that Bishul and Afia, the cooking and the baking took place after Shabbos and Yishayev, that's only with regard to Bishul and Afia. Don't extrapolate from that a universal rule that applies to all Malachas, that you could always be Chayev for setting a process in motion, even though that culmination in that malach is achieved after Shabbos. No, that's not so. That's only in Bishul and Afia. Why? Why Bishul and Afia the exception? Because you're chayav for setting the process in motion. If you accept the Rashash and the Chelkas Yov, Yushalmi is establishing this parallel between Afia and Bishul and Zriya and all of the above. The Maisa Machayev is setting the process into motion. The Malach itself could take place whenever. We don't care where. After Shabbos. Mashenkin and other Malachas, they're Yachayev not just for setting the process in motion, but for the culmination of the process. The actual Havara, for example, in that case, has to take place on Shabbos because it's part of the Machayev itself. You know, it's basically when let's say, for example, you set into motion a process whereby the malacha would take place after Shabbos. You really didn't do a malacha at all. Right? Why? Because your chayv, if the malacha takes place on Shabbos, when you set into motion a process that's going to culminate after Shabbos, that's a whole different story. So I'm wondering, you know, I'm thinking out loud, some of the technological issues that come up in Shabbos, the practical, contemporary halachic issues, perhaps what you could set up is an electrical system where the actual malacha would take place after Shabbos. How can we imagine such a thing?
A delay on a time clock.
Yeah, with a delay. If let's say, for example, in construction, and we're talking about Meleches Bona, where you put one brick on top of the other until you finally build a building, what would be if you would... If you only have... How would you set it up that the binyan would take place after Shabbos? I don't know. I'm not coming up with a good case.
Maybe Makar Bapatish. Maybe a scenario with that.
But how would you envision a case of Makar Bapatish where the process would only reach its fruition after Shabbos? That's what I want to come up with. I mean, Harvey mentions the clock, you know, that delays the malach. That could be. Again, if we right now it's theoretical, but if we come up with the following scenario, the vision would be that I set up a malacha on Shabbos by preparing all the ingredients, and now the malacha will take place, but it'll take place after Shabbos. In such a case, we have this issue here about the Yushalmi, whether the Yushalmi is only talking about Bishul or it applies universally.
Ingredient separated by ice, and the ice is going to melt. As Shabbos gets slow, we're the ice is going to be melting and melting and melting. Finally, ice melts and the two things meet and they form something.
Right, but that gets into other issues about Groma, which I would rather, you know, if we could avoid that.
Mousetrap game. You know the mousetrap game? The marble goes around, flicks the switch.
And the afia, if the afia takes place after Shabbos, that's going to be machlokas between the Rashash and the Chelkas Yov on the one hand, with the support of the Yushalmi, and the Igle Tal on the other hand. Again, that's when the afia, the Bishul, takes place. Oh, so here would be an interesting case. Oh, now I thought of something. What happens if I have a pot of water on the fire on Shabbos? So let's say Reuven puts the pot with water in it on the fire on Shabbos, and it's boiling away. No. It's not boiling.
It started
heating up. Sorry, wait, let's see if I can. Now comes along Shimon and he removes water from the pot, leaving a more limited volume of water in the pot. That's called Bishul also. Why? The two types of Bishul. Bishul is either cooking from A to Z, or speeding up the process of bishul. So, for example, I didn't introduce this properly, pedagogically. Just to clarify, if Reuven puts a pot on the fire and Shimon turns the volume of the fire up one notch, then both Reuven and Shimon could be chai for bishul. Why? Because Reuven is chai for putting the pot on the fire, and Shimon is chai because he speeds up the process of bishul. Let's say he throws in wood into the campfire, and as a result, woo, the fire starts shooting high, and before you blink, the food is cooked. But what happens in a case where he removes the water from the pot, right, half of the water that's in the pot, the other half of the water is going to cook, but that cooking process will take place after Shabbos. Like, you remember now they have the Shabbos modes, but in the old days, there were all sorts of halachic questions about the mecham mayim, what's it called in English?
The urn,
right? Yes, you have the urn, and one of the issues is that as soon as you take the hot water out of the urn, it causes a speeding process of bishul with regard to the remaining volume of water in the urn, because that volume is no longer the same. So I'm just wondering if what happens, that even though, despite the fact that he minimized the volume of water in the urn, but nevertheless the process of bishul is only going to take place after Shabbos. And that's really what we're talking about. But again, you know, I don't even need all of that. I just can, let me not complicate matters when they're much simpler. He put the dough in the oven 20 minutes before, or 5 minutes before the end of Shabbos. The actual afiyah is going to take place after Shabbos. That's going to be a machlokas between the Rosh Hashanah and the Chalkes Yoav on one side of the equation, and the Igle Tal on the other side of the equation. Rav Soloveitchik's point in the next paragraph, as we saw earlier, is that even if I hold like the Rosh Hashanah and the Chalkes Yoav, that's only because the definition of this particular malacha called afiyah is putting the dough into a situation where, through a process, it's going to culminate in bishul, in afiyah. But as far as other malachas are concerned, the malacha has to take place from A to Z, the entire malacha on Shabbos. So let's stop here. And again, what I want to know from you, we're up to the paragraph that starts by Yisod on the bottom right of Chaf He. And you'll have to give me a response to the following question. Do you want to continue this or not? You know, it's a little bit of a digression for us, but I think it is quite, first of all, intellectually stimulating and challenging, and at the same time very fundamental in terms of the setting up halachas here. Because we always have to ask ourselves the fine question: when the Torah prohibits something, is it prohibiting the setting up the process, meaning you put a process into motion, or is the culmination of that process an integral part, an essential part in the machayev itself, and you chayev for the ultimate culmination? In Shabbos, that kind of issue becomes very high profile, because you can set into motion a process of a malacha, but the malacha itself, which is the culmination of that process, will take place after Shabbos. And if the culmination is part of the aveir itself, then you didn't violate Shabbos. But if, on the other hand, the violation is the maisa of setting up the process, then the culmination is only a tenai, and that tenai can be fulfilled and implemented after Shabbos. Okay, then? So we'll stop here.